I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What You Need to Know is brought to you by Morongo Casino Resort and Spa. Good times, less than 90 minutes from wherever you are. Lindsay, what do you got?
All right, guys. So LAFC advanced to the Western Conference Final in the MLS Cup playoffs last night with a 3-2 victory over the Galaxy in the latest dramatic edition of the rivalry known as El Tráfico. LAFC, which captured the league's supporters' shield as the top team during the regular season, will host the winner of Austin FC and FC Dallas on October 30th for the right to advance to MLS Cup on November 5th. It is also the second time LAFC has defeated the Galaxy in the playoffs. The last time was in 2019. So good luck to LAFC in the Western Conference Final next weekend.
The LAFC headed to the Western Conference Finals right here at the bank on 710 ESPN. Can you do a Mario impression, AK?
Oh, I can't do Mario. Mario's so smooth. Mario's way too smooth for me.
Yeah. That's like our Cap doing the impression.
It's really Cap doing Mario. Yeah.
Maybe I could do the cadence, but I can't do an actual impression. Be like, LAFC at the guard, or at the bank.
Yeah,
it's terrible. I told you it was terrible.
More breathy. It's like LAFC.
LAFC at the guard. It's terrible. Laura.
And you keep calling it the garden.
I know. I do keep. Yeah, I don't know why. Why am I calling this the garden?
That's tripping me out.
The bank. It's the bank.
The bank. Yeah.
So that is what you need to know. Congratulations to them. And we will look forward to see who they will play next Sunday in the Western Conference Finals in the MLS.
I'll be at the Garden waiting for them.
Yeah, they'll be at the Garden. Yes, exactly. You'll be at the Garden. Everybody else will be at the bank. Yes. Yeah. So there you go.
Maybe they can bring us a chip, you know, because the Dodgers.
Look, hey, I take it. Okay. City of Champions.
I'll take it.
Listen. Are the Galaxy fans salty today? I wonder.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. Salty Galaxy fans. People are saying I should be a Galaxy fan because I live in the South Bay and Carson is right there. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, the Galaxy never sent me any free stuff. So listen, you win my heart by sending me gear. I got jerseys. I got kits. Sorry, they're called kits that they sent me and all sorts of other goodies they sent recently when they came in studio.
All jokes and, you know, partnerships, sponsorships aside, all that, the LAFC did an incredible job ingratiating themselves into LA.
Immediately. Yeah. And that stadium helps too.
Yeah. Oh, that stadium helps too. But Tom Penn is one of the guys that...
The president.
The president. And years ago, did an interview with him about that. And he talked about how they were really self-conscious of the idea that they did not want to be seen as interlopers, like particularly dropping into an area like that that has often been exploited and gentrified and all that. Mm-hmm. Right. So they went out of their way to really like talk to the community, find out like what the community wanted, like really try to make themselves a part of that area. Like it was a really high priority for LAFC, and they were doing it years before they actually opened up.
Yeah, no, they did a lot of research. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, Tom, you know, you and I know him from his basketball background. He was one of the he was in the front office for the Portland Trailblazers for many years.
He's a
smart
guy.
And then worked on ESPN for many years after that.
Really smart dude.
Yeah, great guy too. So we're very excited for them and happy for them. And keep it going is what we say.
At the garden, baby.
Not at the at the bank, Andy.
At the bank. BK, we have a question. Somebody in the circle of trust.
You just called him BK again.
I'm sorry, AK. Damn it. You'll see why I called him BK this time. The gentleman who is in question here in our circle of trust, his name is Mike B. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Mike B wants to know, after he complimented you, and now he complimented you a second ago and then realized that you or your brother has blocked him on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of this. I'd have to look into Mike B. I no disrespect to Mike B. I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why we blocked him. It might have been on accident. Yeah. Or, you know, I'll do a little bit of back.
Maybe like, you deserved it, Mike B.
I was going to say, I mean, look, because I don't know Mike B, I have no idea. Mike B might be, you know, something of an asshat. I have no idea.
Right. Like, and it could have rubbed BK the wrong way.
Right. You know, yeah, that's
brother,
true.
Your brother has that temper, man.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it could very well be Brian, you know, being oversensitive, overreacting. Like, yeah. I mean, he's not easy to get along with.
You're right. Yeah.
I would know.
I know. You've shared, you know.
But I'll look into this, Mike B.
Yeah. All right. There you go. We'll put it through the we'll put it through processing. How about that, Mike B?
Yeah.
We'll review it. Review your case.
We'll take it to HR.
So LeBron. Now, LeBron, I want to hear this first. Brad Turner was doing the Lord's work yesterday because he asked LeBron this question too. So remember LeBron on Tuesday after the Warriors game made the comment about we don't have any lasers or whatever, and you know, when referring to the three-point shooting or lack thereof. So Brad Turner's like, hey, LeBron, you know, you mentioned the other day you don't have any lasers and, you know, three-point shooting still not that good. Like, how do you guys fix this? Like, what are you going to do? So LeBron took an interesting approach to Brad's question or line of questioning. Go ahead, play that. LeBron about responding to the three-point shooting.
Yeah, I don't think that's really my mindset. Obviously, I was asked a question on Tuesday. I answered it as straightforward as you can answer it. But as far as you know, I love the way we're playing basketball right now. We're sharing the ball offensively. We're moving bodies. I think we will begin to knock down shots as we continue to. You know where we want to be on the floor. Guys know where they want to be. But our ball club is our ball club. And I'm definitely not going to sit here and harp on what we can't do every single game. It's not a leader.
Okay. Now, let me say this. He's right about the last sentence. It is not being a leader. Like, sometimes you point stuff out. Other times, you know, you be encouraging. It's a tough balancing act. There's no doubt. But what I will say is this. LeBron. You know when you say what you say on Tuesday, that is not just going to go away into, like, you know, evaporate into the atmosphere. Like, you say that, of course that stuff is going to stick for a minute. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just expect that all of a sudden that nobody's going to remember what you said on Tuesday either, though.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When you're LeBron, it doesn't matter. Like, it may stick in terms of the effect for other guys. And, you know, it's going to become a talking point and something that other guys on this team who also aren't shooting the ball well. And LeBron, actually, in Thursday's game was as bad from outside as everybody else. But at the end of the day, I agree with him. I think he actually was answering it pretty matter of fact. Like, this is not a team that is built for shooting. But he went out of his way to say a lot of complimentary things that I think were actually accurate, like not just blowing sunshine. Like, I think it was actually accurate about the way they played Thursday against the Clippers.
No, agreed. But you can't just dismiss this like, I'm not going to harp on this stuff. Okay, I get it. But, I mean, a follow-up question to that, considering you had another poor performance shooting, is not like something that is out of line,
look,
I would say.
He's just going to put this loaded grenade in everybody's lap. But he's not going to keep talking about the grenade, George.
Right, that's my point.
The grenade.
Like, come on. Yeah, you have to know. And look. I don't know, man. Like, he's been around 20 years. So at this stage, I've seen this dance before where he says the thing that's on his mind. And I, again, respect it. Give me all the honesty. So when you say, look, I answered a question honestly, good. That's what we want. And maybe today you feel different. I understand that. But we can't just sit here and forget about what you said 2 days ago.
Here's the thing, though. I think in terms of LeBron messaging, whether you're talking about things that he says fairly directly, whether you're talking about the passive aggressive stuff, the fit in, fit out, like the quote that he will give to a reporter about one thing that's really about something else.
Yeah.
I actually think, and I think this is what LeBron was trying to say, and I don't think he's wrong, on a scale of 1 to 10, this was about a 3. Like, I don't think this was particularly
scorched. No, I agree. But it's just game one, and you don't normally hear that stuff on game one. I think if he says that in like a month into the season, it is a 3. Because there's a large sample size. But when you say it after game one, the 3 goes to like a 7.
I don't know. I mean, I just kind of feel like it's him saying, look, man, this is not a team that is built on shooting. Now, right. If he said, like, this is a team that is not built on shooting, and because of that, I don't know how the hell we're going to go about winning, that feels more like a 7. Like him just saying, we are not built on shooting. This is not a team with lasers. And I love that phrase, by the way. Yeah. I'd never heard that before.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're not a bunch of lasers. I don't think, honestly, I don't think it's messaging. Don't get me wrong. It is
sure.
messaging. But I don't think, again, in the grand scale of LeBron messaging, I actually think this is pretty tepid.
I would agree. No, I'm with you on that. I just think it's funny, like, all of a sudden, like, we're just supposed to forget about what he said.
Well, I mean, look, when you are somebody of LeBron's clout, one of the privileges is, you know, never really having to say you're sorry.
No, I don't. I'm not wanting to say sorry. I appreciate the candidness, but
that's where you can basically throw it out there, like, oh, I mean, why are we harping on the big thing that I just said? You know what I mean? Yeah, like, you get to do that when you're at that level. It's one of the privileges. Why everybody should try to be at that level.
Well,
you get a lot of leeway.
You lead me right into where I want to go next, because I thought Brian Windhorst today made what I thought was the most pointed comment that anyone has made in the media about the Lakers, not only just in two games into the season, but just the off season in general, or even like I don't know, going back a year basically. So Brian and them were talking about obviously the Lakers game on NBA today, and he just kind of, in his very windy ways, brought up like a just an observation, and I was just like, yeah, you know what, Wendy? You're right. Why the hell are the Lakers doing that this way? So I want you to hear what Brian said about the way the Lakers are handling their business right now.
Well, what you said about them waiting 20 games is a lot what the league does think that they should do. They think they might need to wait 40 games. They might have to even wait 50 games for the trade deadline. What the league, and I feel the same way, has some question about is in this interim, in these games now, why are the Lakers prioritizing making sure Russell Westbrook is comfortable when they should be prioritizing LeBron James is comfortable? They are bending over backwards, and they did it again last night when they were playing the exact style of ball that LeBron wants, which is defense and grind it out, and then they bring Russ back in the fourth quarter because they're trying not to alienate him. From the day that Darvin Ham took over, his number one priority has been what? Maximizing the team around the all-time generational player, still providing huge numbers, or dealing with the guy who's past his prime, who's too surly to understand the reality. Mm. And that is what is mystifying the league as they watch the Lakers start this season. Why are they not doing what's most important for their best player?
I want you to address that on the other side, okay? Because we have some time here. We're kind of up on a break. But I want to hear what you have to say about that. Because honestly, when Windhorst said that, I kind of like tilted my head. I was like, yeah, why didn't I think of that? Like, this is why Brian is so damn smart. Because he's 100% right in my estimation. But I'd love to hear what you have to say. We'll get to that coming up. Plus, Charles Barkley just went in on the Lakers front office yesterday. We'll let you hear that coming up. Stick around. We're back in a couple minutes here on 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a great song.
It is a great song, but
they sing that every year when we go camping. You guys made fun of me for going to the Hoot Nanny.
The
finale of the Hoot Nanny is the My Ding-a-ling song.
Well, there you go.
Everyone sings along to it.
And Chewy apparently likes it too.
Oh yeah, he loves that song. It's his favorite.
Do you think Morales has like a My Ding-a-ling anniversary alert? Like set up in his searches.
Yeah, question.
Because only Morales would land on that.
Pops on his phone.
I made him put it in the rejoins because he was like, what is this song?
But it's totally up his alley.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah. Now. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, speaking of kind of cool anniversaries, today, you know, it's not the ding-a-ling, but I actually think it's more important here in this community. Although as much as we love a ding-a-ling on a Friday song, or a ding-a-ling song on a Friday, rather. today, big rivalry game in East L.A. You got Roosevelt, Garfield. It's at the Coliseum. I believe the Black Eyed Peas are going to be performing at halftime. This thing is a – look, this is one of these things that, you know, in its heyday was getting like 40,000 people to watch this game. I don't know if that's going to be the case at the moment, but it certainly still rings true as a big, big rivalry game in the high school ranks. All the alumni go. There's like after parties for the alumni and different restaurants and stuff. And, you know, these schools are basically a couple blocks apart from each other. It is kind of a really cool deal. And it's something that's really kind of woven into the fabric of the community, particularly in on the east side of town. So cool deal tonight. It'll be something, you know, if you're just a sports fan or you love L.A., you should keep an eye on it. I'm guessing the local news obviously will be all over it today in regards to their news coverage later in the evening. But cool stuff, certainly, to keep an eye on. And maybe we'll chat about it a little more later tonight.
Garfield, that's the stand and deliver. School, correct?
From
the
movie? I believe so, yes.
The movie with Edward James Olmos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that is Garfield, which is a really interesting story in and of itself. Like, if people aren't familiar with it, the Edward James Olmos movie, or just learn the backstory on Garfield and the way they look to improve the education there in East L.A.
Yep, it is Garfield, yep. So definitely cool stuff, but those two schools get together. There's a lot of people that are interested in that, so I wanted to make sure to shout them out tonight since the matchup will be going on. But in the interim, all right, so we played this sound from Brian Windhorst today from NBA Today about the Lakers and basically just kind of like, why are you catering to Russ so much? And again, if you didn't hear it, we'll just play it real quick. Laura, if you've got it again, can you play it? Because I want to hear what Andy's thoughts are. Because, look, I wholeheartedly agree with Wendy, but if you didn't hear it a second ago, here it is.
Well, what you said about them waiting 20 games is a lot what the league does think that they should do. They think they might need to wait 40 games. They might have to even wait 50 games for the trade deadline. What the league, and I feel the same way, has some question about is in this interim, in these games now, why are the Lakers prioritizing making sure Russell Westbrook is comfortable when they should be prioritizing LeBron James is comfortable? They are bending over backwards, and they did it again last night when they were playing the exact style of ball that LeBron wants, which is defense and grind it out, and then they bring Russ back in the fourth quarter because they're trying not to alienate him. From the day that Darvin Ham took over, his number one priority has been what? Maximizing the team around the all-time generational player still providing huge numbers, or dealing with the guy who's past his prime who's too surly to understand the reality? And that is what is mystifying the league as they watch the Lakers start this season. Why are they not doing what's most important for their best player?
It's a great question. Why aren't they doing that, Andy?
Okay, look, like you, I like and respect Wendy a lot. But let me get this straight. Windhorst is complaining that the Lakers were emphasizing defense in the fourth quarter and were playing Russell Westbrook to try to cater to him. Russell Westbrook actually was playing really good defense in the fourth quarter. He had some key stops and key moments matched up against Kawhi Leonard, getting him out of his comfort zone. Like, if that's what Windhorst is talking about, I don't understand what the complaint is.
Well, I right, but then they benched him at the end of the game.
Well, but the point is, though, he was part of that fourth quarter. He played, he was not the problem, other than the shooting, which, get in line, he wasn't the problem, certainly not defensively.
No, I understand, but do you believe, I don't think he's necessarily focusing on the one individual game, and maybe he used that to kind of emphasize his point, but Russell Westbrook is not a good defender. Fair?
He has not been, but he was. I thought he did a good job in this game.
Yeah, okay, fine. He did a good job on two possessions against Kawhi.
No. It was multiple possessions.
And by the way,
it was multiple possessions.
I would say this. I would disagree. I will say this because I watched that, okay? And I was sitting right there, right across from their bench. So I saw the communication they had when the next timeout came. And basically, what Paul George was saying was, yo, Like, what Kawhi was complaining about was like, yo, just throw it up. I have the advantage on him. And Paul George's like, yo, you got to give me a bigger strike zone for me to throw it to you. You can't just like say throw it up because I'm trying to throw it to your hand. And it, so both of them had a point. I felt like it was really – not that Russ didn't do a pretty good job there. I feel like it was less – it was more about the lack of communication between Paul George and Kawhi than anything Russ was doing.
But the point being, though, he was effective while he was out there. He wasn't hurting anything defensively. Like, I just think that's a strange way to frame it. Like, where
no,
I thought
– I disagree. What? I don't think he was a plus defender yesterday.
But he was no more a minus, if you want to frame it like that, than anybody else. Where I thought Windhorse was going with this, honestly, was the idea of starting Westbrook as opposed to playing him off the bench. That's where I thought Windhorse was taking that thought. I just don't think the fourth quarter thing, especially if you're looking at defensive focus and intensity – Russ was not a problem there. Like, here's the thing with Russ right
but
now.
But he's a problem there most nights.
But not then, though. But he wasn't then.
Okay, but okay, forget that for 1 second. Let's zoom out, okay? What he's saying is that the Lakers have catered to Russ over LeBron in his time here. He did say that.
Russ is on this team because they cater to LeBron. Like, stop.
Well, no. Let's not get that twisted.
No,
okay?
he's LeBron is not the only person who wanted him there. But LeBron is someone that wanted him there. Like,
correct.
LeBron is a driving force. Maybe not the only one, but a driving force.
But
so they did cater to him.
But they also haven't catered to him in other instances either.
Like
it's not
what?
Like they catered to LeBron.
Like what? Not making a terrible trade at the deadline last year? There was no good trade for them.
Not getting Kyrie when they could have gotten him in July because they didn't want to trade both picks when the Nets were in complete disarray. And then
they were
to come
never
back.
Going to move Kyrie
that's
until
not,
they had Durant
settled.
I am telling you,
I've said it on this show before, had they in July, not August, when it was reported later that the Lakers came back and the Nets were not quote-unquote negotiating in good faith, because by then Josiah had already flown to Europe. In July, Andy,
I don't agree. I've talked to people and they've said they wouldn't.
I am telling
either.
You that I know this on pretty damn good
okay.
authority.
All right.
That if they would have included both picks with THT and Russ, that they would have had Kyrie and Joe Harris.
Okay. I've been told otherwise. And based on the way they behaved, and if you're looking, if Durant is your number one priority, you're not going to make a deal that is going to make the Nets worse. And
really?
That deal
because
would have
I can make the case that Durant at that time probably wasn't really all that keen on having Kyrie around.
Well, yeah, because he would have been dying to have Westbrook. That's the guy
who
wants Westbrook and Taylor Horton Tucker.
But the deal, Westbrook wasn't even going to be there.
But so you're going to end up with an empty roster spot? That doesn't make the Nets better.
They were going to implode the whole thing.
They were never going to do that until they knew.
Kevin Durant literally went to, I'm not going to tell you the player he went. Kevin Durant was ready to make a ruckus of everything because he wanted out and then realized he couldn't do it because he didn't have the leverage.
So that means it wouldn't have happened. You're making my point for me. It wouldn't have happened.
At that time, the Nets were freaking out and they were just like, oh, well, maybe we're stuck here. And then Josiah basically sought counsel and thought to himself, no, you know what? We're going to stand up to these guys. This is what we're going to do. But in July, the deal was there to be had.
I just don't agree. I don't think until...
It's not about agreement. I'm telling you that is the case.
I'm telling you what I've been told is not the case.
Like, okay. I can't tell you who I heard it from, but I'm telling you this person would know.
Okay. To me, it defies... Unless they were going to really look to tear it down, which in that case, I don't know how they had such a dramatic turnaround... That relatively quickly to go from we are going to tear down this entire team that we moved heaven and earth to create to we're not moving any of these guys. That's a really dramatic turnaround to encounter over just like a couple weeks.
Okay.
That's pretty dramatic.
Dramatic, but actually what happened?
Okay. I mean, I find that difficult to believe. I think it might be how they felt in the moment, but I don't think they would have actually gone through with it.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I think they were ready to go through with it because they realized they thought at that time that this thing is over.
Well, I mean, but they decided that it was not only over or not only not over, but worth keeping intact pretty quickly.
Well, you also are talking about some of the individuals in play here, and I'm not trying to besmirch anyone. When it comes to these players that, let's just say, don't always have the strongest resolve, right?
Sure.
No, I understand what you're saying. I mean, Kevin Durant is not somebody who is going to go nuclear. Like, that's just not his nature. Like, that I assume you're talking about him. And that's not the way he operates.
Correct. But I don't think – I feel like they have gone out of their way to make Russ comfortable. And you know what? It's not going to happen. He's not going to be comfortable in this scenario because he is an awful fit on this
team. Yes, he is. He is.
It's not – and by the way, do I think Russell Westbrook could be on another team and play more like Russell Westbrook and look more like the Russell Westbrook we've seen in the past? Yes, I do think so. I don't think that can happen on this team.
I don't know, actually, to be honest, where Russell Westbrook really fits in the league. Like, I actually think if this does not work out this season, there is a very big non-zero percent chance Russell Westbrook's out of the league, because what team does he actually fit on, I think, is a really difficult question to answer. I like where he actually makes sense. If you're really going to let Russ play within his comfort zone, I'm not sure there is really a fit in the league. But in all honesty, I don't think they're trying to make Russ comfortable to cater to him. I think they're trying to make him comfortable because they know until they find a deal that they deem worthy this season, they have to make the best of this. Like, he is still in the upper half of talent on this team. Like, that's not even debatable.
I mean, well, yeah, because that's how bad the rest of the roster
is
right
now. Sure, but right. It's not, that's not praise of Russell Westbrook. It's an evaluation of the situation. So until they can actually land on a deal that they think is worth it for this roster, that can, I guess, take them to the baseline of contention that they deem worthy to pull the trigger.
I don't think there's a deal that can do that.
Well, that's part of the problem, actually, in all honesty. That's a big problem.
Not one that would be available that I foresee.
Well, I agree.
Because here's the thing. Like, let's just do the Indiana thing for a second. If I tell you they can get Miles Turner and Buddy Hield, where does that put them?
I think it actually puts them somewhere around a solid 6-5, maybe a 4, but in a position to possibly capitalize if other teams have some bad breaks, which I think is about as good as you can get this season.
I think right off the top of my head, okay, you got Warriors, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Grizzlies, I would say, are better than them still.
Yep.
The Clippers are better than them.
Yeah.
After that, I would say – I actually think New Orleans is going to be better than them.
New Orleans looks really good. They look really good.
I think New
good.
Orleans is going to be better than them. I think Phoenix is better than them.
Well, so I don't know, man. Phoenix looks like a team with some bad vibes that could get in the way.
Perhaps, but right now they look better than them.
And, you know, the Clippers –
And I even think Minnesota is going to be probably
I think Minnesota
is
going to be good.
And I haven't even talked about Denver yet.
Look, you got to put your – here's the thing, though. You either have to put yourself in a realistic – place of contention this season, or a realistic place of competition, like competitiveness, or you just have to say to yourselves, this is not the season to make our move because we only have one shot at this. We kind of have to punt this season. And next offseason, when Russ is off the books, we have 30-ish million in cap space. We have those two picks. That gives us the best, relatively speaking, opportunity try to be as good as possible.
But in essence, then you are punting on
yeah.
the season.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. This was always the biggest risk with the Russ deal. It wasn't even the fit. It wasn't even Russ's attitude. It was, if this goes sideways, fixing it is going to be damn near impossible. That was always the biggest risk. This was a
right,
2-year
commitment.
Right, because
you can't even get into like the Scoot and Wembanyama sweepstakes because the Pelicans can get your pick on a pick swap.
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest risk. If this doesn't work, you are stuck. And that's where they are right now.
We've painted a rosy picture today.
They did play better,
Happy
though.
Happy Friday,
game
everybody.
They played
we're
better
probably driving. We're driving you to drink a little early today.
We'll just make sure you're off the road. That's all we ask.
Exactly. Use an Uber. All right, Radio Tinder is next.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks, Christopher. Super excited to be doing Radio Tinder.
Keep yeah, Hungarian Heat Day or whatever it is he said.
I got a, yeah. I'm like an eighth Hungarian, so that's exciting.
Oh, cool. Oh, look at that. Yeah. You and Linz.
Apropos that I'm here.
There you go. You can be like mini Hungarian Heat.
I got to get me some of that mandala, by the way.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Do.
I mean, look, if we had more of Cappy, you know, more that was destined for Cappy, we'd just give it to you.
Yeah, he's happy to give away Cappy's tequila mandala.
Well, I'm happy to take it, so don't be shy.
Next time you're in.
I mean, Ramona got a nice bottle of it, actually. It was funny. Ooh. She got a little reposado.
She was in the right place at the right time.
No, I've heard it's quite good.
Yeah. Play we'll work on it, AK. How about that? We'll work on it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I got people.
I know. I know you are deeply connected. You've got sourcing with the mandala.
I do have sourcing with tequila mandala in the tequila community. All right, Linz, go ahead. What do you got?
All right, so the Astros beat the Yankees 3-2 at home last night and now lead the ALCS 2-0. And Yankees manager Aaron Boone is blaming the team's loss on the roof. Yes, on the roof. In the postgame, Boone asserted that Judge's eighth-inning flyout might have been a two-run homer if not for the open roof at Minute Maid Park. He said, quote, "I think the roof being open kind of killed us. I think it's a 390-foot ball." This, of course, was all over social last night, and even Mike Francesa was one of the many who chimed in, tweeting, quote, "Yanks sound like losers after the game. Shut up about exit velocity. Try hitting the ball." Do you agree with Mike Francesa? Swipe left or swipe right, Sedano?
I do. And I say that as someone who really loves Aaron Boone. I got to work with him when I worked in Bristol, and he's a really nice man, and he's a good baseball guy. I just, you know, look, every once in a while, when you talk a lot, that much for a living, I mean, we do it. We certainly say stupid stuff, you know, and you're that available. Like, you're going to say stuff that you probably like, probably shouldn't have said that. Or because people can see it in a quote and maybe not hear the context of what you were saying. I think that sort of that stuff can get taken out of sorts and context as well. So I you know, but I don't love to agree with Mike Francesa very often, but I do feel like if he could have it back, I feel like maybe Boone would have it back.
Yeah, I mean that sounds like sour grapes. It also it's probably not what your team needs to hear.
Correct.
Right now, like when they really have to find it in them to make some type of big comeback. Like that's just you don't need to hear as a player that your manager is a baby. Like, it just doesn't help.
Yeah. I love
and
that.
And by the way, we'll
baby.
Have more baseball talk with Blake Harris, our Dodger insider. We'll do a little baseball talk with him in the next segment. So he's going to stop by normally Thursdays, but because we had Lakers yesterday, he's been kind enough to join us today. So there you go.
And real quick, one more thing about the would-be home run, according to Aaron Boone. Per StatCast, that Judge flyout would have been a home run in just one ballpark. Of course, Yankee Stadium. So interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Anyway, last night, Taylor Swift dropped her much-anticipated new album, Midnights. And today, Spotify revealed that Midnights had become the most streamed project in a single day in the Spotify history. It's so popular that Twitter users even reported that Spotify briefly crashed last night as fans were flocking to the app just to listen to Taylor Swift's new album. So are you two, George Sedano and Andy Kamenetsky, going to listen to any of Taylor Swift's new album? Swipe left or swipe right, Andy?
Which is no. Swiping right?
Left.
Swipe left. Happy for Tay-Tay. The Swifties, I'm sure, are very proud of her. That's terrific. It is legit impressive, but no, I'm not likely to be listening to the album.
Am I going to seek it out? No, I will swipe left. You know, if I happen to hear it, you know, on like the radio or something, then, you know.
You don't want to hear one song?
Like my wife is a Taylor Swift fan. I'm going to end up hearing this stuff. I just
she's
don't
a Swiftie?
I don't know if she's a full-on Swiftie. Like,
I mean, if you're a fan, you're a Swiftie.
Well, I guess she's a Swiftie. I mean, if that's all it takes is just to be a fan, then she's a Swiftie. Yeah. She's not like Emily, though, the producer for Travis and Slee, who's like essentially in a Taylor Swift cult. Like she's that into it.
I did not know this about him.
Oh, she is
hardcore Swiftie. Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
Now, who would you rather not be in harm's way for? Is it the Swifties? Is it the Bayhive? Or is it the Riri Navy?
The Bayhive. I think the Hive is
a real thing.
Okay, they're mean.
Years ago, I posed this as a poll on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Who would you rather not be on the bad side of? Who scares you more to be on their bad side? The Bayhive?
Yeah.
Or Kobe's?
I think it is the Beehive, actually.
The Beehive or Kobe
Stands.
Yeah,
somebody said something about it being the Beehive over the Bayhive.
Okay, anyway, the Beehive. The Beehive or the Kobe Stands?
Ooh, Kobe Stands on Twitter were pretty... Man, there was a time that if you even said anything remotely negative about Kobe, and even if it was, like, fair, it was going to be a problem for you.
The point where I realized... Because, you know, I covered the last 10 years of Kobe's career.
Correct.
And the point where I realized it just doesn't matter what you say, so don't worry about the reaction.
Yeah.
A piece I wrote for the LA Times Lakers blog when that was our gig back in the day, the comment section was just filled with, oh my God, it's so obvious how much you hate Kobe. Like, your coverage is so personal. You should just stop, man. You hate the guy. This was a piece I wrote about why he should be MVP. I'm not joking. That was the reaction in a piece I wrote about why Kobe should be MVP. People were crushing me about how much I hate Kobe. So I just realized, you know, it just doesn't matter.
Right. No, it doesn't matter. That's for sure. People are going to just assume whatever they assume, especially in the internet age. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. So what's next, Lindsay?
All right. So last night, the Panthers traded running back Christian McCaffrey to the San Francisco 49ers, who beat out the Rams, apparently, and other teams for the versatile star. The 49ers reportedly sent their 2023 second, third, and fourth round picks and a 2024 fifth round pick to the Panthers for McCaffrey. And McCaffrey, of course, he's going to make it even tougher on the Rams in the NFC West. And the Rams have not defeated the 49ers in a regular season game since 2018, which is seven straight losses. So do you guys think that the Rams are going to regret not landing CMC over the 49ers? Swipe left or swipe right, George?
Are they going to regret it? Short term, maybe. I would say yes, I guess. But long term, no. I just don't think his body can hold up. Now, the Niners don't need him because they've got Wilson and they've got a couple of other guys in the backfield that they can utilize. So he's just part of a group there. With the Rams, he'd probably get the bulk of the carries, is my guess, especially now with this whole Cam Akers situation. So, yeah, I don't think long term they'll regret it. If that's your question. So I will swipe left on that.
Here's where I will swipe right. If they must have felt that he could stay healthy enough, because they were apparently pretty deep into conversations. Like, they were interested in McCaffrey. If they managed to get McCaffrey, to me, that gives them the ingredient that is the closest to replicating Todd Gurley when Gurley was a part of this offense. And to me, that period with Gurley was when this offense was most dangerous. Even taking into account the year they won the Super Bowl, like, I think they looked the most absolutely dangerous when Todd Gurley was like a one of one running back. And I think McCaffrey would replicate a lot of what they were looking for with Gurley. So if you were looking to kind of recapture all of that offensive magic and creativity of McVay's offense at its peak, I think maybe that's where they would miss it the most. Regret it the most.
And look, because their offensive line is so terrible, he's basically a safety valve.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep. So, and a safety valve for Stafford if his elbow is a thing, which I think it might be.
Right. Well, I mean mostly for him, because they're not going to run the ball that much with him. He'd be utilizing the passing game in my
absolutely
much more.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah. Lindsay, do you have one more, or are we done?
That's all I've got for Radio Tinder for today.
There you go. All right. So we'll talk some baseball with Blake Harris, our Dodger insider. I want to actually ask him some Dodger stuff, you know, now that we've got the post-mortem situation with them. So we'll get to some of that. Maybe we'll talk to him a little bit about the playoffs, but mostly about the Dodgers. We'll do that coming up in just a second.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, Huey, he was pretty huge at that time, man. Like, this movie, him, all the music, like, it was
the videos.
Like, yeah, the videos were fantastic. You know, and maybe their videos are now great too, but I guess they're all on YouTube and they're not, like, on linear television anymore for the most part. And I guess because of that, like, they're not in my purview as much anymore. But I really feel like, especially that, like, in the 80s, because, you know, music videos were like a new phenomenon at that time. I feel like everyone was trying to outdo each other in like the creativity aspect.
A lot of the videos were fantastic. They were really, really entertaining. What's funny now is I cannot hear Huey Lewis in the news without thinking about American Psycho. Like American Psycho now. It is all I associate that band with now is Christian Bale killing Jared Leto. And while explaining the essence of Huey Lewis in the news.
Yeah, that's true.
That's all I think about now.
What an excellent movie. I haven't seen it in a really long time, but it is one of those movies that if you haven't seen it, you know, maybe if you're young and hasn't crossed your movie selections, like definitely watch that. That movie's fantastic.
Speaking of Back to the Future, have you seen that clip from, I don't know if it was like a Comic-Con or like one of those type of festivals where Christopher Lloyd and Michael J. Fox were reunited? And, you know, Michael J. Fox, unfortunately, is dealing with, I believe it's Parkinson's.
Parkinson's,
correct?
Yeah.
And the two of them reunite, this hug. I mean, it's, if this does not affect you, you are just dead inside. It's really, really moving.
I haven't seen it, but I will definitely seek it
out.
It's
not hard to find. It's amazing. Like, it really is amazing.
You know who also is amazing? Not to oversell him, but our buddy here, Blake Harris. Are you familiar with Blake's work?
Not only am I familiar with his work, I have actually retweeted him a couple times, and I gave a shout-out to you and Cappy for making him a regular of this show, because I enjoy his work.
Yeah, he's good stuff. Blake, again, follow him on Twitter, at Blake Harris TBLA. Subscribe to his Substack. Don't be a cheapo. Support journalism. Kids doing good work with the Dodgers. And, of course, the podcast is Inside the Ravine. Hey, pal, so have you ever seen American Psycho? Is that, I mean, you're fairly young, but I would imagine, like, you know, I feel like you're a little bit of an old soul.
Yeah, the good thing is I'm not that young. I have seen it, but I did watch it for the first time, I want to say earlier this year, and I was a bit confused by it. But my girlfriend loves that movie, so it's on often, so I've watched it a few more times this past year, yeah. But up until last year, I had never seen the movie before.
Wow. What'd you think? Other than the confusing part. What were you confused by?
I was going into it thinking it was just going to be an absolute slasher from beginning to end. But I guess, you know, the whole thing with the storyline near the end, I had no idea what in the hell was happening with the entire process. I was lost. But then again, I also don't think The Godfather is a good movie, and I'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
Damn it, kid. You know, you were doing so well. We loved you so much. It was nice knowing you.
I know. I thought I'd get that kind of reaction. I'm very interesting when it comes to my movie takes. Like, I have some controversial takes.
Yeah, right. But by the way, Lindsay, I believe, is on your side on this one. She has, I think she's tried to watch The Godfather and just fell asleep. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've never seen it. I have never seen it past the first, like, 10 minutes because it's just, to me, it was just, like, boring. Like, where is this going? It was just too boring, so I turned it off.
Well, it goes further than 10 minutes, Lindsay.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I've never seen the whole thing because I've tried and it just wasn't interesting. So I'm with Blake, but American Psycho is like probably a top 10 favorite of mine.
Yeah.
It's so great.
You know what, Blake? Not all of us are perfect. You know, we thought you were perfect, but clearly you're one of us. So it's okay. All right.
It's
so
all good.
where do you go from here if you're the Dodgers, man?
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough question, George. You don't know where to go because for the last 10 years, this has been one of the best teams in all of baseball. And it's been one of the more dominant stretches we've seen in the history of the sport. And they only have one championship to show for it. Now that 2020, you know, championship is starting to look a little kind of fishy now that the Dodgers apparently can't win in a regular season. So I don't know where you go. Obviously, they kept Dave Roberts. They're keeping him for 2023. They're saying the coaching staff's going to be back. But at some point, you need to just figure, we got to change something up. So now that they're not changing the coaching staff, maybe they opt to just instead go much younger with the team. Maybe they opt to give more of their top prospects more runway next season, see what the young guys have to offer. But I don't know, because we talked about this literally every week the entire season. This team was built to win the World Series. They were the betting favorite. Everyone thought they were the favorite. And the fact that not only do you come up short, you don't even make it out of the NLDS. So there's a massive problem there. I don't know exactly what it is or what needs to be fixed, but I think it's going to be quite the offseason for the Dodgers, and maybe their most hectic offseason during this decade run of dominance.
Before we get into some of, I guess, the hectic results that you're talking about with the offseason, there's so much focus and heat on Dave Roberts and the way that he uses, you know, starting pitching, relief pitchers, when he implements them, when he'll take starters out. How much of that do you think is Dave Roberts's feel or lack thereof versus this is the script, and this is a script that's come up collectively, and for the most part, you are not allowed to deviate from it?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I wish it's one that we really knew the answer to, because Andrew Friedman in his press conference this week said that Dave Roberts has all, you know, the runway for every move that happens. There's no pregame script. But, you know, I just don't know. I wrote an article on this earlier in the week saying, screw the analytics, screw the computers, just watch the game and have a feel, because Tyler Anderson, he should have been out there for the sixth inning. Mm-hmm. Instead, because the computer said you're not supposed to face the order for the third time, he was taken out of the game. For the bullpen matchups, you know, later on, the analytics say this is the better matchup, but Yency Almonte, the guy that George and I have backed the entire season, he recorded two insanely huge outs. But instead, he gets pulled because the computer says so. So I don't know how big, you know, of a result the analytics are, because Dave Roberts, numerous times over the last 5-6 years, has made a number of baffling pitching moves because the computer said to do it, but the eye test said, you know, what the hell are you doing here?
Which you had mentioned, like, which direction you think they could go, like the young guys, maybe they re-sign some of their veterans. Like if you were running the show, if you were Andrew Friedman, I'm going to make you Andrew Friedman for a day. Which direction would you go?
George, are you ready for some spicy takes?
Let's go. Listen, you already told us you hate American Psycho. So, right, go ahead.
But he didn't like The Godfather.
I don't hate American Psycho. I just don't believe the hype. Okay. But I will say the business card scene is definitely one of the better scenes I've
seen.
Great. I love the business card scene. All right, so if I'm Andrew Friedman, this is what I'm doing, guys. I'm thanking Trey Turner for all he's done, and I'm letting him walk.
Ooh.
I'm moving Gavin Lux. I'm keeping him at second base. Moving Max Muncy to third base. Guys, I'm going to go with a spicy take number one, and that's going to be signing Aaron Judge. I'm signing Aaron Judge because I think the Dodgers desperately are going to need a new outfielder because Cody Bellinger might be gone. And outside of Mookie Betts, they're going to need one. So if it costs $300 million, the Dodgers need another power hitter in that lineup, and I think they got to do it. Guys, spicy take number two. I don't want to be thrown off air for this, but I think the Dodgers should make a legitimate run at Carlos Correa.
I'm with you on both of those things. Go ahead. Keep it going.
I think Carlos Correa is the best shortstop on the market. This guy shows up in the postseason, and the number one reason why I want him, he has a fire. He has a passion that I think the rest of the team can feed off of. George, I don't know if you noticed this during the series, but the Dodgers, that they seem to have no passion. They seem to have no energy in that dugout, and I think it was missing. The Padres, when they were drawing walks, guys were cheering. They were getting out of the dugout. The Dodgers didn't have that. I think Correa could light that fire. I know it would be a controversial signing because of what happened, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. But at some point, you got to just let what happened in the past be in the past. And if he gives you the best chance of winning, I say you got to do it. So, Von Freeman, I'm calling Aaron Judge. I'm calling Carlos Correa. And I'm seeing if I can sign both those guys. Because if you're able to bring those two guys into your lineup, that is going to be an insane lineup next year. But we'll see. We'll see. But if I'm in charge, that's the direction I'm going.
That is not only spicy, just the experiment in real time of watching Dodger fans have to wrap their head around rooting for maybe the player they have hated the most of anybody in baseball for the last 5 years, but knowing what he can do. Like, I have friends who are Giants fans, and they talked about what it was like for them to root for Barry Bonds, who is so unlikable but was so great for them. You're essentially rooting for a mercenary, and that is not always it's not always a fun feeling, but you enjoy when those balls leave the yard, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will say this. For the longest time, Dodgers fans, they hated Chase Utley. But if you were to ask 99 out of 100 Dodgers fans what they think of Chase Utley now, they love the guy. And that's because when he put on the Dodger uniform, he was fantastic. So I know the situations are a little, you know, actually vastly different, but there have been players that have come in that fans have, you know, not been, you know, hugely supportive of. But by the time they leave the Dodgers, they're huge fans, because if you produce, at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
All right, what do you make, before we let you go, how do you think all this stuff shakes out here in these series?
The way it's looking, it's tough to see the Astros losing to the Yankees at this point. I mean, they've just been dominating. So I think the Astros, as of right now, I believe the Phillies might have the lead over the Padres. I'm not sure how that game's going right now, but I think the Phillies have some magic going on their end. So I'm going to go with the Phillies. And at the end of the day, it looks like the Astros are just the team to beat. They were the number one team I was worried about all season when it came to the Dodgers. So I think it's Astros-Phillies, and I'm going to go with Astros over the Phillies in the World Series.
All right, fair enough. Blake Harris, our Dodger insider, baseball insider here on the show. Follow him on Twitter, at Blake Harris, TBLA. Subscribe to his Substack, the Blake Harris Substack. And, of course, the podcast is Inside the Ravine. All right, pal, thanks for stopping by on a Friday. We appreciate it, as always, and have a great weekend.
Hey, no worries, guys. If you want some more controversial movie takes or just talk about some hot movie scenes, we can do that in the off season instead of talking about the Dodgers.
Yeah, I'm not subscribing to your movie Substack, Blake. I got to be honest.
No worries there.
All right, pal. See ya.
All right, guys.
There he is. All right, AK, coming up next, I want to get back into the Lakers a little bit. Woo! Because I mentioned earlier Charles Barkley had some strong commentary for the Lakers front office. We'll let you hear what he said. And I do want to touch on, we got some football to get to. It's a whole weekend of football, including a big game for UCLA. That's all coming up this final hour as well. AK's in the house for Cappy. One more hour to go, 710 ESPN.